we've got to enjoy the ride more. And instead of craving these champagne moments that we share on Instagram and, you know, these big moments in life, instead, you know, take it down into the short-term goals. And that short-term kind of metric of success I have is amount of impact made on a daily basis.
Welcome to the Speak Your Success Podcast. Welcome to the Speak Your Success Podcast. I'm your host, TEDx speaker and best-selling author Jonathan Jones, and I'm here today. We have a special interview with Mr. Chris Tuff. Hey, how we doing, Chris?
What's up, Jonathan? I'm good. I am good. We're 8 hours away from published date.
Oh, man. Yeah, 8 hours. So how are you feeling? Tell us how you – walk us through this. How are you feeling right now, man?
It's funny. A lot of people have been asking me that recently, and it's kind of emotional. You know, it's I guess I go back to like my intentions around writing this book, The Millennial Whisper. And it revolves around two main points, which is how do we bring more love and empathy into our world and more human connection? And I think that's what we need now more than ever before. And I start the book with my own journey, and I'm very transparent and vulnerable in that. And it's been a lot more work leading up to launch than I think I anticipated. And I can honestly say, like, I've done absolutely everything possible to make this a success and to have the impact that I want it to have. And that's about as much as I think you can do. So I think it's relief. And I'm just trying to practice what I preach a bit with, you know, one thing I say in the book and what I try to lead with is, we've got to enjoy the ride more. And instead of craving these champagne moments that we share on Instagram and, you know, these big moments in life, instead, you know, take it down into the short-term goals. And that short-term kind of metric of success I have is amount of impact made on a daily basis. And so what I'm trying to do is just enjoy this a little bit, because it's been very... it's been a lot more challenging than I initially thought it would be when I set out to do this about 15 months ago. And I know I've also done it in a pretty quick turnaround, which it did when I was writing it. It seemed super slow. But now, like, the promotion of leading up to a book is it's crazy. It's crazy. I could have used a little bit more time, maybe. But hey,
okay,
we're figuring it out as we go.
Yeah. Well, you just broke it down and you told us to focus on, you know, just focus on breaking down the day, and you focus on that level of impact that you made. How did you get to this perspective to where you began to think the way you think in regards to that? It's like, wait a minute, I don't want to focus on the year. I don't want to focus on the month. I don't want to focus on the week, but let me just bring it in. Like, was there something that
happened? Yeah, I hit rock bottom. I start my book there, and that was about 2.5 years ago. And rock bottom for me was a realization that I was prioritizing the wrong things in life. And I think, you know, what it made me do was refocus all of my energy into my family, my two daughters and my wife, and into forging real connection with others. And so it was through that I also figured out that one of the other things I messed up was my own metric of success. And my metric of success up till my, you know, hitting rock bottom was beating my brothers. I'm the youngest of six kids in the game of life. And I went, and that is the essence of focusing on kind of those champagne moments. And so I refocused that into, my metric of success needs to be judged by myself when my head hits my pillow. Did I have the impact that I intended today? And the good news is every night I have been successful in that.
I love that.
So I think it's also a big thing with our generation. Like, I'm deep down a millennial, right? I'm born in 1980, but one of the things that I talk about leading into a lot of these promotions is millennials aren't the problem. They just expose the problem. Or millennials, a mindset, like my friend Mike Hibison says, and who's one of the stories, he's an executive at Home Depot. And I think there's a big element of just mindfulness. I bring a mindfulness instructor in once a month to help, you know, retrain our brains to stop living in our feeds and, you know, really relishing these moments that are life. And like, look at this, like we talked for the first time, about 30 minutes ago. We're like, let's hop on this Zoom. Because, you know? Like, that's what it's all about. This is what it's about. So.
Because you brought up mindfulness, and it's funny because I was on the plane yesterday coming back from New Orleans, and I was actually sitting next to my friend. Her name is Amanda Muhammad, and she does mindfulness training. Like, she goes into schools and works with superintendents, principals, and all that good stuff. But what brought that about? Like, what brought that to you, or what made it to where that was a focus, to where you wanted to see more, a little bit more about, and learn more about that?
Yeah, it's an embarrassing story, but one thing I do as a leader within my organization is I'll start off talking about how we've got to stop comparing our insides to other people's outsides. And one of my favorite kind of topics or places that I feel like we need to empower leaders to do more of, which is kind of managing millennial angst. Because one thing we've got to understand is this generation has grown up with this. Right. And, you know, anytime we wanted that instant gratification or that build me up, we would post something on Instagram and get it. And now, how do we instead take some of those things and break it down into truly enjoying these moments in life, whether them be good or bad? We've got to take a time out to do that. And you can probably tell I'm high energy. I'm a go-getter, and mindfulness for me is like an oxymoron, but I figured out a way to make it work. And so the embarrassing story I talk about was 3.5 years ago, I was in Sun Valley, Idaho. Mm-hmm. And I was there for a wedding. And obviously, I'm in Sun Valley, Idaho in September. Why would I want that shot of me on Instagram? That's that movie scene from A River Runs Through It with Brad Pitt, with the silhouette of the mountains in the background and like kind of the fly fishing. So I turned to this guy. I'm like, listen, dude, I'm going to pay you $600 to take me. I want that perfect shot. And I don't care whether or not I catch a fish. I want you to catch me a fish, a trout. And I just want a picture of it in the net so I can post both those things on Instagram. And this guy looks at me and he's like, dude, are you serious? You're paying $600 for Instagram posts? I was like, no, $300 each, totally worth it. Let's go. And I use that as an example of kind of what we do in our lives. We really do. We try to display this perfect life that we live. And instead, I think what we're forgetting is where real connection happens is, like, what, I mean, granted we're through a video screen, but it's breaking it down and talking person to person about real things that make us who we are. And so that idea of stop comparing your insides to other people's outsides. And, you know, I think another complex that we all deal with, it's not millennials, it's all of us. It's the grass is always greener complex, where we think that the perfect job is somewhere outside of here. And in the book, I talk about my 70-30 rule. And my 70-30 rule is teaching everyone that 30% of your job's always going to suck. 30% of your job is always going to drain some of your energy. 70% should fuel you up. And how you know whether or not you're in the right job is what I call my sitting in your car rule. And if it, for 2 days in a row, you're sitting in your car and you're about to go into work, and you have that sense of dread, and that sense of dread isn't associated to your own self-development, meaning you're pushing yourself out of your comfort zone, or your own procrastination, then something's got to change. And I think in our life, and in our society, we've forgotten to, I think life should be a ruthless pursuit of passions. And that's why I wrote this book. This became my passion, as I try to help others find theirs. So that's my quick rant on all that.
Wow. No, I love it. The 70-30 rule, man. I love that. I really love it because what is it? I pulled up some statistic. I believe it was a Gallup poll, and it said 85% of Americans hate their job. But according to the 70-30 rule, I guess the next question would be, when did we poll these people? Because yeah. If you poll somebody after they get a raise, of course, they're going to love their job.
Totally.
If you poll somebody, you know, after they got reprimanded, then maybe not. But I think that's really great. I think that's something really for people to take time and reflect on. And like you're talking about, going back to mindfulness, looking, okay, wait, there's 5 days. Okay, we'll say I went to work 5 days this week. Okay, one of them was bad, but the other four were great.
Yeah.
So let me just get over it. Let me just move on. Man, yeah. I really love that. I love that.
Well, and I think it's with experience that I think we get stuck in these. I have a friend. He's a ridiculous human being. Okay, and a lot of my friends are ridiculous. His name's Garrett Graveson, and his goal. We were grabbing coffee, and his goal is to, he said, run the 2028 Olympics in LA. So he'll be the guy that runs the whole thing. And I turned to him and asked him a question, which was, what are you going to do when you wake up the day after the close ceremonies and you just accomplished that? What's next? Is it another big audacious goal? And what if between now and 2028, your passions and drive changes? Because we change as human beings. There are certain things that we can't control that are going to change us. And it brings up this idea of our long-term goals, the wrong way to go about life. And instead, if we just focus on what I kind of call this ruthless pursuit of passions, that will kind of, it's not linear. And I think that's uncomfortable for people, but allow us to get these experiences to then take us to what is in your head and heart. Isn't that the better way to go? So I don't know, another thing to think about.
No, I think that's really good, because like you said, as human beings, we're human. So our passions can change based on different current events. Our passions can change based on our perspective, based on a different book that we read. Somebody might read The Millennial Whisper and like, wait a minute. I'm sitting in the car. Wait, no. I think I need to, something's got to give somewhere. Maybe this guy, Chris, is on to something.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope I'm on to something. We're about to find out whether or not the public agrees with it. But I think it's one thing saying, it's another thing doing. And I think we spend so much of our lives dreaming, and we lack the confidence to take action. And I think accountability and action are key things. Even in reading some of these books, and I mean, the way that I wrote the book was at the end of every section, there's a make it happen. So what is it that we're talking about, theory? Now, how do we apply that into a day-to-day takeaway that we can actually apply to our lives? And I feel like we all need to take more action and accountability for where it is that we're going. It might not always be right, and that's okay. And I think we need to do it all with an idea of building each other up. Like, I think we really do need to lead with empathy, because as humans and in the way that the world is unfolding, we need it now more than ever before.
Wow, man. Oh, I promise I'm not buttering your biscuit, Chris, but the more I hear you talk about this book, the more I'm anxious to read it, because I feel like you have just a very innovative mind, and just seeing the way that you put this book together, I'm thinking, because after every book I read, I'm in the midst of almost finishing Thinking Grow Rich, and I've read some other books, and you know, like, a lot of these books have great information, but where's the application piece?
Totally.
Where's the make it happen? Where's the get in there and grit it out? Or where's the piece where it actually applies to my life versus Napoleon Hill, or, you know,
totally,
versus the Chris Tuff? So, man. Oh.
So here's one for you, ready? So,
okay.
When Sheryl Sandberg, so I grew up in the social space and social media. I kind of was like one of the, you know, OGs, if you will, in social media. I fell into it, and it was my passion for many years, and still is to a certain extent. But when Sheryl Sandberg first got to Facebook, she introduced a program called Buy When. And the program was for their salespeople, where they would take any of their audacious goals or things that they would say and answer it with one simple question. And that was, by when? And so I kind of, and it helped turn around Facebook and make it the valuable company that it is today. I mean, that is something that is now a part of the backbone of what is their culture, especially their salespeople. And so I actually talk, I forget which chapter it's in, but I talk about turn your let's into buy when. And there's no worse email than let's do this or let's do that. How many of those emails actually end up happening? So instead, and you can do this in person, someone will say, you know what? Great meeting you, Jonathan. You're so delightful and great. Like, let's grab coffee next time you're in town. And then if you return, buy when? They're going to be like, and then you just need to offer up. How about within the next 2 weeks? And what you'll find is that it changes everything. It seriously does. It changes everything.
My goodness.
But I think it's also a thing that's very indicative of kind of, it's a generational shift, but it's a shift with technology and this unaccountability and, you know, instant everything, where we forget to apply that last little buy when thing to be held accountable and to have a real next step, if you will.
Man, I really love that, because one of the things, so I wasn't necessarily big on New Year's resolutions, but this year was one of the first years where I wrote out my yearly goals, but then I broke it down and what I needed to do by each quarter. And then I put in some steps in between that to achieve the quarter goal. So I think that's really great, because the buy now is, I mean, buy when. The buy when really is focusing on giving you a deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to take action. And I think that really goes to show who's serious and who's not. Just like we were talking earlier today. Like we were talking not even 30 minutes ago. And I was like, Chris, man, we need to do an interview. And you're like, hey, let's make it happen.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. So with the book now getting ready to, by the time we drop this, I'll make sure I drop it to where, you know, it goes out by the time the book drops. But what are you most excited about the potential ripple effect after this book? What does that look like for you?
I think it's, you know, for me, it is hearing from people that have read the book and are applying the things in it. Say, I was a skeptic when I heard about this thing, and I believe, and I've seen it work, and this is how. I'm talking to some very large companies about ways to roll out the book on a global scale. And they asked me, they're like, well, so how do we know if it's working? And my response is, well, what metric are we trying? What are our goals? Is it how do we get people to stay longer in their job? Then let's look at retention rates. We've got to figure out that out of the gates, and then we'll work backwards and hold, we'll hold ourselves to real metrics in this. It's not hard. We've got digital everything. Everything is measurable. So let's measure ourselves against that. And so I think for me, it's hearing, Chris, we are able to take our turnover rate of 30% of our workforce on a yearly basis that are largely millennials, and we cut that in half just by instituting some of these things. And, you know, on the back of the book, I write out, you know, bring the beer kegs home. Forget about ping pong tables. Put the participation trophies in the trash where they belong. Because it's a lot more it takes a lot more than just the stuff. One story in the book was someone that took me to coffee, and she turns to me. She's like, Chris, I just can't attract these millennials. And I have a cereal bar where we have 30 different types of cereal that anyone can pick, and they seem to they love the variety, they love, you know, the perks, and I also have all these other things, but they still are leaving. And my immediate question back to her was, well, what are you doing to catch up with them? You know, what is the connection that you have with your different employees? Like, you know, asking some of these deeper questions. And she's like, yeah, no, I don't have a lot of this. It's like, well, let's start there.
I really love that, because I think that's the bigger issue. It's not the millennial issue. It's just, I believe that the generation has been just labeled with certain things that a lot of them are general, like they're so general,
totally.
just a general perspective. And just as like the younger generation, well, the older and younger generations, you know how it goes. Every generation that comes, somebody has something to say about the next generation.
Exactly.
So when it's just literally passing the buck.
Exactly. And you know, one thing I set out to do in the beginning of the book is you got to take this generation and divide it into two joints, older millennials and younger millennials. Mm-hmm. What makes them distinctively different are two variables. One, when the recession either hit them or their parents, and two, when in their life they adopted this and social media. And for the older millennials, they were in the market or about to enter the market by the time the recession hit in 2008. And they, a lot of them, didn't have smartphones and social media until well into college. Whereas the younger ones grew up with it all through their puberty and their coming of age. They had the, you know, Snapchats and Instagrams, and they saw their parents lose their jobs in 2008. And so they inherited a lot of debt. And so what it does is it creates, one of my friends who works for a radio show that I'll be on Friday says they're the Oregon Trail millennials, the older millennials, because they played Oregon Trail at some point in their computer classes. And Snapchat millennials is kind of how I labeled the younger ones. But I think that's an important distinction, and instead of clumping everyone together. And then it's also like, you guys are just taking the synonym of inexperience and putting it with millennials. Like, it's not like anything's changed. Xers and boomers were the same way, you know? And so stop labeling them millennials, where it's just, they're just inexperienced. And we have a few places to push that blame when people show up on their first day of work and they're not ready for the real world, because we've trained them to go from one thing. They went from band practice to varsity tennis to bilingual training in Cantonese. And then they had to do 7 hours of homework so they get perfect SATs to go to the perfect school. And by the time they show up on our doorstep, we're like, why aren't these guys more sociable? Why are we having an issue with this than that? Well, I think we're the reasons for that product.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest things too, because if there's a blame being put somewhere, then the person on the other side of the hand has to look and has to take credit somewhere, because we didn't birth ourselves. We have parents somewhere. We have grandparents somewhere. And if the parent or the grandparent is pointing at us, then it's like, well, mom or dad, how great of a job did you do?
Yeah.
So I think, man. Okay. I don't want to hold you too much longer, but I'm just curious about this because, I don't know if we shared this, but, well, Chris, what else do you do? But besides you being a new author now, what else is it that you do?
I mean, that's hilarious, because that's what birthed this book in the first place. We were on an executive retreat with 14, it might have been 18 guys, and I was in North Georgia, and we were all introducing ourselves. We didn't really know each other that well, and all like kind of high-level executives from around Atlanta. We got away to kind of just share life stories and work on ourselves and mindfulness and all of these things. It was an experiment. And I went to go introduce myself, and I was like, you know what? Like, my role has really evolved at my agency. We're 370 employees, and I started as the kind of digital and social guy, but I'm kind of like the millennial whisperer now. Like, that's what I do. I empower and try to coach this next generation to be better workers and people. And I sat down, and Tommy Breedlove, who was leading the retreat, who I didn't really know at the time, and now we've become good friends, and he wrote the foreword of my book. He kicks me by the fire and he goes, you better write that book. I was like, what book? He goes, The Millennial Whisperer. I was like, I don't know how to write a book. He was like, I got you. Like, just, I'll give you some good resources. And that was 15 months ago. And now here I am about to publish this thing. So, I mean, I think it's a segue into your question of what do you do? And I mean, my passion and drive is to really coach and empower individuals. And it's not any different than what I'm trying to do with my daughters or my relationship with my wife or the guys that I'm best friends with or at my organization. And it's how do we bring more love and empathy into our day to day, and how can we create more connection? And that's what I do every day. And it's the best job in the world.
I love it. I was talking with one of my friends the other day, just talking about how we have so many social media platforms, but now we're more non-social than ever before, yeah, as far as just face-to-face, one-on-one connection type deal. But man, Chris, I really appreciate you taking the time, man, to sit down for us to hop on. And I mean, I can't imagine what else. I know you have so many other things going on, but grateful for you just to take the chance and man, just allow us to do the interview, man.
For sure, Jonathan. It's such a good, it's so awesome to meet you. And we've got to end this with one more tactical takeaway. And what I use is one of my examples of how do you create more of a rewards and recognition program. And so I start every one of our team statuses with what's called snaps. And it started as an experiment and now has become just a part of our meetings every single week. And what we do is we give snaps to each other where I'll say, hey, Meg, killer job on that big presentation that you did yesterday. You pushed yourself. You did, you were able to do this, that, and the other. Snaps. And then everyone gets snaps. And so the way I've been taking pictures with anyone or ending interviews is we give snaps. So Jonathan, I'm going to give you snaps for being awesome and for having me on.
Man, I appreciate it. I received those snaps with open arms. Yes. So Chris, where can people find you? Where can people order the Millennial Whisperer? Because like I told you earlier, I ordered my copy and I'm looking forward to reading it. But just tell the people where they can find you and where they can get their copy.
Yeah, so on Twitter, it's at Chris Tuff. And then the best place to go is either Amazon or my website, themillennialwhisperer.com. And millennial, for those who are like when I first started writing this book, millennial is a tough word to spell. Two L's and two N's. Two L's, two N's. Millennial, themillennialwhisperer.com.
Gotcha. Great. We're going to have all the information down in the show notes. And man, Chris, thank you for being on the show. And we're going to go ahead and close it out like we always do. This is TEDx speaker and best-selling author Jonathan Jones with the one and only Chris Tuff. And we're reminding you to speak your success, believe in your greatness, and continue to create the life and business of your dreams. Why would you want to live any other way?
Love it.